Is San Wong here? Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. Well, good morning. We'll go ahead and get started. Governor Branstad is not with us today. He is out in Washington, D.C., attending the National Governors Association Conference. Today, I am pleased to share that March is National Women's History Month. We will have it be joining us here shortly. She's not here right now. Will be the director, San Wong, with the Department of Human Rights, and some members of the Iowa Commission on the Status of Women will be with us today. But in celebration of the National Women's History Month, and as part of my 99-county tour, I plan to visit several communities and meet with female leaders all across the state of Iowa. I will be taking this opportunity to highlight how women are positively impacting Iowa with their ideas, with their actions, and with their ingenuity. Better understanding what's working for them, what some of the barriers are, and some of the lessons that they've learned throughout their career. The tour really aligns with the 2015 National Women History Month theme of weaving the stories of women's lives. You know, as a lieutenant governor, I've had the opportunity and I've heard so many incredible stories of women who are making a difference, not only in their homes, but in their businesses and in their communities. I've had the opportunity to recognize former Women's Hall of Fame inductees like Mary O'Keefe, Christy Vilsack, Joy Corning, and Nancy Dunkel. I've had the opportunity to meet with and learn from business and community leaders like Lori Schaefer Wheaton from Fairfield, Rowena Crosby, Yang Saw, Mary Andringa, Lydia Brown, and Dee Baird. And I've had the opportunity to meet young entrepreneurs like Emma Peterson and Amanda Styron West, who are really putting in place and helping drive an entrepreneurial ecosystem across the state of Iowa. And just not too long ago, we all had the opportunity to get introduced to Sheila Lynch, who is passionately lobbying for our domestic abuse legislation to help protect victims. And then Joni Ernst, who made history as Iowa's first female U.S. Senator. And I know that there are countless untold stories of women that need to be heard and shared with others. And without a question, there is a movement of women occurring across our great state. A movement that is driven by women like Renee Hardman, who is a small business owner and also a 2014 inductee to the Iowa Women Hall of Fame. The movement is important for Iowa's economic vitality, and now more than ever, we have an opportunity to continue our unparalleled growth by unlocking the potential of all of our talents. And this is particularly true for women-owned business. Women-owned business leaders, women in leadership, women on corporate boards, and women in elected office. And at this time, I would like to invite Renee to the podium to share her thoughts on how women are positively impacting Iowa.
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor Reynolds. I'm really honored to participate in today's press conference recognizing National Women's History Month. My personal story represents how the actions of my mom and my aunt shaped who I am today. Women play a critical role in reaching out and helping others. As a woman who was raised by a single parent along with two other sisters, it is women role models like my mom and my aunt who have shaped me into the strong, civic-minded person that I've become. Women need to see role models who have overcome barriers and who face challenges and have made it in spite of it all. Our life is not measured by the jobs we have or the money we have in the bank, but by the lives we've touched and the impact that we've made in helping another woman or a person reach their fullest potential. We can do that by mentoring, and I really enjoy what the Lieutenant Governor does with the STEM mentoring program. That's one aspect of what we all can do and participate in. Coaching and opening up doors that might otherwise be closed to women. It is important to reach one and lift one. You know, as I close my remarks, I'm sharing a story about another incredible woman who I volunteer for and serve on her board, and it's Jody White, who's in the audience today, who's Executive Director of Dress for Success. Every day, Jody works with women to provide them with professional attire to secure employment. But her job is more than just giving out new outfits. Jody is helping these women gain the confidence that they will carry forever and the knowledge that they can actively define their lives, the direction that they take, and what success means to them individually. Jody's stories and actions continually inspire me. I hope that she inspires you too. So, Lieutenant Governor, thank you so very, very much for recognizing the importance that women play in Iowa history.
Thank you. Thank you, Renee. Well, thank you so much, Renee. You know, what Renee said about the importance of women seeing themselves in other women is so true, and, you know, really STEM is a great example of that. While women comprise about 48% of the U.S. workforce, just 24% of women are in STEM fields, and that's why we continue to encourage young girls and young women to be involved in STEM education and to take a look at STEM-related careers, highlighting women like Peggy Whitson from Mount Air, who is the female commander of the International Space Station, who has spent approximately 377 days in space, more than any other American astronaut. And part of this strategy also includes coordinating efforts and capturing the synergy from initiatives like Iowa Women Lead Change, NABO, Nexus, and Invest She, or Dressing for Success, just to name a few. With this tour, we really hope to begin to connect the dots and build a network of women who are, again, positively impacting Iowa with their ideas, their actions, and their ingenuity. And with that, I think we would be happy to open it up for questions.
Thank you. I'm from West Des Moines, Iowa, and my business is Hartman Consulting, LLC, and it's a human resources consulting business.
How did you get into your business?
I have 25 years of human resources experience. Primarily, I worked as senior vice president of human resources of a local financial institution in town, and enjoy now the luxury of having my own business and doing my own thing, helping companies here in Iowa with lots of human resource needs that they have.
Speaking of women role models, Joni Ernst has said that she hopes to inspire other women to run for high political office. Do you hope to inspire other women to run for office and maybe break Iowa's glass ceiling of the process?
Well, you know, I continue to ask young people as I travel the state of Iowa and meet this incredible talent that I see in women leaders all across the state. When we get into a discussion, it is not unlikely before we end the discussion that I am saying to them, have you ever considered running for office? We need individuals like you that are engaged and inspired and, you know, have a passion to make a difference. So almost always I end the conversation by asking that question. So we're always continuing to look for ways that we can encourage women to run for office. I think we're making progress in Iowa. I'm really proud of the number of female women that we have leading our various departments and agencies. These are key agencies across the state of Iowa. They're making a tremendous impact on really driving Iowa's growing economy, creating quality jobs, providing education for our young people. And I'm really, really proud of the number of women that we have involved in this administration. You know, I'm going to do just like I've done over the last 4 years, and you're going to see Governor Branstad and I continue to travel together, and you're going to see Governor Branstad and I continue to do things on our own. I've had the opportunity to lead trade missions. I've had the opportunity to travel the state. I've had the opportunity to work with education and educators through the STEM initiative and business and industry by bringing the two together and continuing to, you know, eliminate the barriers that we've seen, the silos between business and industry and educators. And so, you know, it's an opportunity for me to continue to do what we've been doing the last 4 years and work on something that I'm passionate about. And that's really about encouraging women to be actively involved, to seek what they're passionate about. But, you know, and it's a key driver to continuing to grow Iowa's economy, and that continues to be one of our number one objectives. No, this is a tour to meet with women all across this state to start to build a network, just like Renee talked about, so we can use them as a resource, so I can go to them and say, what's working, what's not working? We're taking a look at this initiative. Give me some feedback on how that impacts business up in Northwest Iowa or Southeast Iowa. Be a mentor to young people. Invite them into your business. Show them what it means to be a leader, a business leader in your community. So, you know, it's an opportunity opportunity to, as I said, to connect the dots and tell the stories. It's not dissimilar to what I did with the STEM initiative. What we saw with the STEM initiative was that there were some great programs happening across the state, but it was really happening in pockets. And so that was an opportunity for us to really put in place some infrastructure, highlight what's working, tell the stories, raise awareness, and by doing that, you know, I think we're seeing a significant difference with STEM for young people in the state of Iowa. I expect to be the best lieutenant governor that I can be. When we ran for office, we've had a very focused agenda. I'm really proud of the accomplishments, the progress that we were able to make in the first 4 years. But as the governor says, and as I've always said, we're just getting started. We're excited about Iowa's future. We're excited about the initiatives that we put in place that we believe will continue to grow the economy, create quality jobs, restore our leadership position in education, you know, continue to look for ways that we can provide health care and help make Iowans healthy. And I'm excited about the future, and we're going to continue doing the work to serve as a partner with Governor Branstad.
But of course, Governor Branstad has said that he wants to groom you to be governor. So are you going to be, even though we just had the election,
yeah,
are you going to be doing anything to lay the groundwork for a campaign for governor in 2018?
Well, we just had an election. We've got 2016 before that, so we got to take a look at, you know, having somebody lead this nation in 2016. I'm going to do what I have done over the last 4 years. I have traveled to all 99 counties. I did that in the campaign for the first election. I continue to do that over the past 4 years. I'm on my way in this first year. It's by far one of the favorite things that I do as a lieutenant governor, because you really get a sense of what's working out there, to really visit business and industries, to see the great companies. I was at Geldwin on Friday. That's in Grinnell. I had no idea that they employ between 800 and 900 individuals in that area, and they have job openings right now. So they're looking to bring people in. They're looking for a skilled workforce so they can continue to grow. So it's that kind of opportunities, whether it's small, whether it's companies like Renee's. It's a great opportunity to really see what's happening in the state and to listen and to understand what we need to be doing differently to continue to create that environment where they can grow and be successful, getting Iowans the quality careers that they deserve. You know, I think he was just saying that's something that we need to look at. I think sometimes in government we tend to say first that it's never been done that way, it's not possible, it's not something that we can move forward with. So he indicated that he was willing to take a look at what some options would be to identify some of the shortfalls of the bill that's been indicated by the individuals that are trying to access the oil. And so what you need to do, how you start that process, is you start by taking a look at what some of the options are, and then you further research those options to see what is possible and what isn't possible, and that's how you move forward. Well, we'll continue to review it and see, you know, what is possible moving forward. So I don't have any that I can specifically give you a list right now, but we're going to continue to look at the situation. We have to be very thoughtful in how we move forward, and we want to make sure that we don't have any unintended consequences. So there's a lot of areas that we need to take a look at as we move forward with this. You know, I'm not going to say whether I support that or not. We're going to take a look at what the options are. I think we need to be very careful. I think, you know, there are a lot of states that passed laws last year implementing very streamlined and specific targeted use of the oil. And so we need to, you know, follow through with the process and see what next steps are.
Thank you.
you know, I'm going to let the legislature, you know, do, it's two separate branches of government, so I will let the legislative process take place. I have always supported that. I thought that it was, it needed to go to a vote of the people. That is how we bring finality to the issue. So I'm on record. I have always supported that the people should have the opportunity to weigh in on this decision. I am not.
Do you have any greater concerns about, are we doing a good enough job taking care of those who are coming back with issues?
Well, you know, it continues to be a number one priority. We want to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place to meet the needs. They have certainly sacrificed and served our country, you know, to protect our freedoms. And so we want to make sure that we provide them the care that they deserve. Commandant Timeson has done a phenomenal job at the Veterans Home. We meet with them on a monthly basis. They give us an update of, you know, what they're working on at the facility, and it gives us an opportunity to monitor that. So, you know, we absolutely believe that we need to do everything that we can to provide our veterans the care that they deserve. Well, again, that's a separate branch of government, and I can tell you I learned a long time ago never to make any speculation on whether a bill is going to come to the floor for a vote or how it's going to turn out. So, you know, until they take that final count, I think we don't know. You know what, I think everybody agrees that there needs to be something done with the deteriorating infrastructure. The Battelle study certainly has indicated that for Iowa to continue its economic growth, that we need to be investing in our infrastructure, which is roads and bridges and broadband. So I think, you know, all leaders have tried to work in good faith to look at what the art of the possible was. We had several different options on the table. They've came to a compromise, and that is the bill that you see before you. Not everybody got what they wanted. It was a compromise. And what we are seeing is part of the problem is that counties are funding infrastructure by bonding. We've had several counties that have turned to bonding as a mode to address the shortfall in roads and bridges, and that is paid back by property tax. And I do not believe that that is the way to fund the infrastructure in the state of Iowa. So when you look at what the options are, this is the option I think that, you know, makes the most sense to move forward to start to address the shortfall in infrastructure across the state of Iowa. Something has to be done. This is a compromise that both parties on both houses have been able to sit down and work through. I think we need to continue to look moving forward how we address the long-term needs of infrastructure, but with the declining revenue coming in from the federal government and with the shortfall of $215 million, that's not going to get any better. And so we need to figure out a way that we can fund our infrastructure. And, you know, I mean, this was an independent study, the Battelle study, and it indicated for us to continue to grow our economy that we need to invest in our infrastructure. Paul Trambino has done a phenomenal job of looking for ways that we can save in the Department of Transportation. I'm really proud of what he's done to streamline and bring efficiencies to that department. I see it every day through his use of technology and really the efficiencies that he's brought to the agency. And I know Paul will continue to look for ways that we can enhance the system. Well, I'm going to wait and see what that bill looks like when it comes to our office, like we do with every other piece of legislation. You know, through the amendment process, you know, a bill that's submitted and goes to the floor can come out completely looking different. So, Bill, until we see what that final product looks like, what you can say is I realize and recognize that something has to be done with the infrastructure in this state. An independent study, a Battelle study, has indicated that that's what we need to do. And so we have tried to figure out a way that we can fund infrastructure without putting it on the backs of Iowa property taxes, which has a direct impact on growing the economy and small businesses across the state of Iowa. So I don't believe that property taxes is the way to fund that.
What were the moves that Speaker Paulson made on Thursday?
You know, I have a great deal of respect and admiration for Speaker Paulson. I think he has done a phenomenal job of Speaker of the Republican Caucus, but that is a legislative matter. It's a separate branch of government, and I'm certainly not going to tell Speaker Paulson what he should or shouldn't do. Well, we truly believe that this is the year to stand up and stop bullying, and I think we had great support and from students all across the state when we did our press conference. I think we've taken into account issues that legislators had in the previous year. It passed both houses last year, but in different forms, so it was not able to go to the governor for his signature. I think this is a year that we will get it done, and we want to make sure that we do everything we can to make sure that our young people have a safe environment to learn in. And this is a good bill. It's taken into account issues that legislators had last year, and we're going to continue to work with legislatures to encourage them to help us get that done this year. Because we've listened to them last year. It passed both houses. There was some concerns. We have parental notification, but there's also a waiver if they feel that the child will be endangered at home. There was some concerns last year about if they move to another school district due to bullying, that they could immediately start participating in sports. I think it's a good compromise. I think it's a good bill. And I really believe, I really like the mentoring piece, the pilot program that's put in place. We have school districts across the state that are already utilizing that, and I think it's really important to encourage and champion our young people that are going to stand up, so you have upperclassmen really working with the lowerclassmen, telling them that this is unacceptable, and when we have the students really monitoring themselves and saying enough is enough, I think that's where we're going to start to see the impact. Sorry about having to drive patients all the way to Northern Iowa, an additional cost to taxpayers in their counties. What are you hearing from your old Senate district and the folks down there about the proposed program? I didn't quite have them. I had seven counties in South Central, Southwest Iowa, but I kind of stopped short there. I got awful close. But we have had the opportunity to meet with them, and really I think they recognize that this is an outdated system that we currently have. It was designed in the 1800s, and so they just want to make sure that there's a plan and there's a process in place, and I think that we've been able to indicate to them that there is, that really we need to modernize the delivery system. I think taking advantage of the mental health redesign, counties have regionally, they'll be looking at a surplus of about $100 million that they can really incorporate into providing quality care for mental health patients. So we're working with the regional partnerships. We're working with the University of Iowa hospitals to make sure that they can provide through telemedicine some psychiatric assessments. And with managed care is another component of really making sure that we deliver quality service to mental health patients. And with the plan that they have in place, we will see an increase, I think, of about 6 beds for the acute psychiatric patients. So we're going to continue to work to make sure that we have in place a delivery system that's modern, that's community home-based, and really continues to provide quality care for individuals.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.